all yogis, the one with great faith, who always abides in me, thinks of me within himself, and renders transcendental loving service to me, he is the most intimately united with me in yoga, and is the highest of all. That is my opinion. Please repeat. And of all yogis, the one with great faith,
the one with great faith,
who always abides in me,
who always abides
in me,
thinks of me within himself,
thinks of me within himself,
and renders transcendental loving service to me,
and renders transcendental loving service
unto me.
He is the most intimately united with me.
He is the most intimately united with me.
In yoga.
In yoga.
And is the highest of all.
And is the highest of all.
That is my opinion.
That is my opinion.
Okay, so if we could all mute.
So, purport by His Divine Grace, Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. The word Bhajate is significant here. Bhajate has the root in the verb bhaj, which is used when there is need of service. The English word worship cannot be used in the same sense as bhaj. Worship means to adore or to show respect and honor to the worthy one. But service with love and faith is especially meant for the Supreme Personality of Godhead. One can avoid worshipping a respectable man or a demigod and may be called discourteous. But one cannot avoid serving the Supreme Lord without being thoroughly condemned. Every living entity is part and parcel of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and thus every living entity is intended to serve the Supreme Lord by his own constitution. Failing to do this, he falls down. The Bhagavatam 11.5.3 confirms this as follows. Yesham purusham sakshat atma prabhavam ishvaram na bhajate avajananti sthanat rashtaha patani adaha. Anyone who does not render service and neglects his duty unto the primeval Lord, who is the source of all living entities, will certainly fall down from his constitutional position. In this verse also, the word bhajate is used. Therefore, bhajate is applicable to the Supreme Lord only, whereas the word worship can be applied to demigods or any other common living entity. The word avajananti used in this verse of Srimad Bhagavatam is also found in the Bhagavad Gita, avajananti mamuda. Only the fools and rascals deride the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Sri Krishna. Such fools take it upon themselves to write commentaries on the Bhagavad Gita without an attitude of service to the Lord. Consequently, they cannot properly distinguish between the word bhajati and the word worship. The culmination of all kinds of yoga practices lies in bhakti yoga. All other yogas are but means to come to the point of bhakti in bhakti yoga. Yoga actually means bhakti yoga. All other yogas are progressions toward the destination of bhakti yoga. From the beginning of karma yoga to the end of bhakti yoga is a long way to self-realization. Karma yoga without fruitive results is the beginning of this path. When karma yoga increases in knowledge and renunciation, the stage is called jnana yoga. When jnana yoga increases in meditation on the super soul by different physical processes, and the mind is on him, it is called ashtanga yoga. And when one surpasses the ashtanga yoga and comes to the point of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, it is called bhakti yoga, the culmination. Factually, Bhakti Yoga is the ultimate goal. But to analyze Bhakti Yoga minutely, one has to understand these other yogas. The yogi who is progressive is therefore on the true path of eternal good fortune. One who sticks to a particular point and does not make further progress is called by that particular name, Karma Yogi, Jnana Yogi, or Jnana Yogi, Raja Yogi, Hatha Yogi, etc. If one is fortunate enough to come to the point of Bhakti Yoga, it is to be understood that he has surpassed all other yogas. Therefore, to become Krishna conscious is the highest stage of yoga. Just as when we speak of Himalayan, we refer to the world's highest mountains, of which the highest peak, Mount Everest, is considered to be the culmination. It is by great fortune that one comes to Krishna consciousness on the path of Bhakti Yoga to become well situated according to the Vedic direction. The ideal yogi concentrates his attention on Krishna, who is called Shyamasundara, who is as beautifully colored as a cloud, whose lotus-like face is as effulgent as the sun, whose dress is brilliant with jewels, and whose body is flower-garlanded. Illuminating all sides is his gorgeous luster, which is called the Brahma Jyoti. He incarnates in different forms such as Rama, Narsimha, Varaha, and Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And he descends like a human being as the son of Mother Yashoda. And he is known as Krishna, Govinda, and Vasudev. He is the perfect child, husband, friend, and master. And he is full with all opulences and transcendental qualities. If one remains fully conscious of these features of the Lord, he is called the highest yogi. This stage of highest perfection in yoga can be attained only by Bhakti Yoga, as is confirmed in all Vedic literature. Yasya deve para bhakti yata deve tata guru tasyete gatitahi ataha prakashante mahatmanaha. Only unto those great souls who have implicit faith in both the Lord and the spiritual master are all the imports of Vedic knowledge automatically revealed. Shrivatasvatara Upanishad 6.23. Bhakti Asya Bhajanam Tad Ihamutropadi Neiras Yet Musmin Busmin mana kapam etat eva nishkamyam. Bhakti means devotional service to the Lord, which is free from desire for material profits, either in this life or in the next. Devoid of such inclinations, one should fully absorb the mind in the Supreme. That is the purpose of nishkamya. Gopal Tapani Upanishad 1.15. These are some of the means for performance of bhakti or Krishna consciousness, the highest perfectional stage of the yoga system. Thus ended Bhaktivedanta purport to the sixth chapter of the Srimad Bhagavad Gita in the matter of Jnana Yoga. Om Agyan Timirandasya Jnananjana Shalakya Chakshu Unmilitam Yena Tashmai Sri Gurave Namaha. I was born in the darkest ignorance, and my spiritual master has opened my eyes with the torch light of knowledge. I offer my respectful obeisances unto him. Sri Chaitanya Mano Bhistam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swaya Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swa Padantikam Panchakalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhaya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnabhyo Namo Namaha. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Srivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Rama
Rama, Hare Hare.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama. Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai. Okay. Yoginam api shavasham mat gatenanto atmana. Shradavan bhajate yomam same yuktatamo mataha. And of all yogis, the one with great faith who always abides in me, thinks of me within himself, and renders transcendental loving service to me, he is the most intimately united with me in yoga and is the highest of all. That is my opinion. So, in this sixth chapter, which we've come to the end of, basically Krishna has described this process of Ashtanga Yoga in some detail to Arjuna. And throughout the purpose, actually, we have seen how amazingly Srila Prabhupada keeps emphasizing that these results obtained through Ashtanga Yoga are actually obtained by the Bhakti Yogi as well, you know, and even higher than what the Ashtanga Yoga, the Ashtanga Yogi has to do to get his results. And we saw some of the very rigid practices that the Ashtanga Yoga needs to perform. We saw how he has to be very, very, very determined to do his yoga, how he has to exercise very strong control over his senses and his mind, and perform lots of austerities to realize the super soul in his heart. And it seems comparatively easier for the Bhakti Yogi because he follows these nine processes of devotional service, starting with Shravana. And practically, he applies this like how we saw Maharaj Ambarish engage in all his senses in Krishna's service. And by so doing, he was able to control his mind and senses, all of them together. And very nicely, he performed his yoga as well to connect with the Supreme. So in this verse here, we are seeing the confirmation, or Krishna is actually confirming very strongly that yes, you know, without a doubt, you know, bhakti is superior. And this is what Srila Prabhupada has been saying right through the purport, and Krishna is actually confirming it here. And the purport also, we see that all the yogas are progressions, you know, ultimately leading to bhakti yoga, because these are progressions, because they are leading to knowledge of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the ultimate aim of yoga. Knowledge of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And bhakti yoga actually connects one with the Supreme Person directly. So this is actually the aim of yoga, and therefore they are progressions, because one has to come to that realization in the end. So Bhagavad Gita describes these three yoga systems generally. And in the Bhagavatam also, Krishna says that he can be known generally by these three processes of yoga, Kama Yoga, and Bhakti Yoga, and Jnana Yoga. He says that. So we know that yoga means to connect, right? Yoga means to connect. And the English word yoke, like yoke oxen, actually comes from the word yoga. So that is connecting. But specifically, yoga means to connect with the Supreme Person. That is actually what yoga means, to connect with the Supreme Person. And last week we had in some class, in one of the Bhagavatam classes, and that we are all trying to connect in different ways, right? We are all trying to connect, you know, and sometimes people connect in the wrong way, you know. They may be trying to connect in a certain way, but it comes out in the wrong way. For instance, there may be like conflicts and arguments and things like that. That is not the normal way to connect, is to connect in a mutually agreeable fashion. But sometimes the connection may take a form of a conflict or an argument. And it is explained that that is also trying to make a connection with somebody, even though it may take the form, or it may take that form, is still trying to make a connection. You know, somebody may be upset with you, and there's conflict, but it may actually be a cry for help. The person may want you to connect with them deeper or in a different way than you are doing. So this is what connection is all about. Just as an aside, Srila Bhaktivedanta Maharaj says that when there's a conflict in our personal dealings, we should first of all take it as our fault. Right? We should understand that it's our fault. We have somehow or other brought about the conflict. That should be our attitude. And through that conflict, we should see it as an opportunity for growth or to change our perceptions or even for more synergy, to connect better with the person and mutually advance in some way. So this is how we should actually view conflicts. And it's not very difficult to see that because, you know, we are all actually a work in progress. You know, nobody's perfect and we all have our limitations and our faults. So we should easily see it as our fault when there's a conflict. And also, quoting from a book called A Course in Miracles, he says that we should see every encounter as a call to give love or as a call to receive love, you see. Every encounter should be like that, you know. Anytime you're encountering anybody, it should be either a call to give love to the person or to receive love from the person. And if we see Krishna in everybody, if we try to see Krishna in everybody, we can imagine how we will have constant connection with Krishna, if that is our attitude. If we see everybody as Krishna's energy and we try to connect with them in that way through loving exchange constantly, then we are always connecting with Krishna. So this is what connection is about. And this is what Krishna is telling us actually in this verse, that the best way to connect with him, the best way to connect with him is actually through bhakti yoga. Krishna is confirming this is the best way to, he's telling us the best way to connect with him. And he tells us that the person who is connecting with him, right, there are certain things that he does. First of all, he has great faith, and he always abides and thinks of Krishna within himself. And he renders transcendental loving service to Krishna. So there's faith, there's abiding and offering of service. So I thought that perhaps we could look at each of these things, right? We could look at each of these things and see how we can apply them ourselves. So the first thing that the yogi has is that he has great faith. He has great faith. So Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he says that faith means that being confident that by rendering, you know, service to Krishna, all other duties are performed. That is strong faith. It means that by giving Krishna service, we actually understand that everything is taken care of. So faith means actually service to Krishna. I understand that service to Krishna is the center of my life, you know. And by serving him, all living entities are satisfied. You know, like pouring water on the root of a tree. If we have confidence that by serving Krishna, everything is taken care of, that is great faith, right? And also, we know that there is a verse in Bhagavad Gita that says that one who has taken shelter, sincere shelter of Mukunda, he owes no duties or obligations to the forefathers, the ancestors, to the family, to the general living entities, and things like that. So if we have that same faith that by rendering service to Krishna, all these things are taken care of, that is what Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, that is Shraddha. And so we feel strong that if we do these things, this will lead to the perfection of our lives. And that is where our faith is. So at the end of the purport also, Srila Prabhupada says that he says that only unto those great souls who have implicit faith in both the Lord and the spiritual master are all imports of Vedic knowledge automatically revealed. So this is how we get Vedic knowledge, right? It's by having that faith in Krishna and the spiritual master. And, you know, Vedic knowledge is the highest knowledge. You know, it is free from the four defects. You know, it is eternal knowledge. It doesn't change. It's changeless. It's pure knowledge. And it is completely satisfying. You know, it's completely satisfying. And, of course, it is not knowledge that is gathered by any process except by revelation. You know, it is revealed knowledge. And so, therefore, it is very special knowledge. And if we have strong faith in the spiritual master, if we have strong faith that by serving Krishna and the bona fide spiritual master, we get this knowledge, then we have to have faith in the knowledge as well. That knowledge is actually pure knowledge, and we should respect it for what it is. It is pure knowledge, and we should value it. And when we hear Vedic statements, you know, we may not actually always understand them, but we have to have that understanding, you know, that this is pure knowledge. And that is how, by that implicit faith in Krishna and the spiritual master, we will get this knowledge. So Shraddha also means attention. And Shraddha also means attention. So in the purport, Srila Prabhupada says that the yogi concentrates his attention on Krishna, who is called Samasundra. So the ideal yogi concentrates his attention on Krishna, who is called Samasundra. So that is where the yogi's attention is. So the question is, where is our attention? Now, these days, of course, we hear of people with short attention spans, you know, and that's what we hear about attention. People cannot pay attention to anything for so long, so therefore, on the television and all that, they have to be constantly stimulated with one image after another. And, of course, this is like a vicious circle, because they are losing more and more their attention. But our attention, you know, we have to ask ourselves, where is our attention? And it's easy to actually understand this idea of attention, because if somebody has $1,000 in their pocket or in their purse, right, and they are walking through downtown Honolulu or somewhere, their mind or their attention will be on that $1,000. You know, that's where the attention will be. Is it still in my pocket? All the time they will be either feeling it or thinking about it, or, you know, if they see anybody who is suspicious, straight away their mind will go to that money all the time. So their attention is on that money all the time. So this is what the yogi is doing. The ideal yogi, his attention like that is always on Krishna. It's quite amazing, right? It's always on Krishna. So our attention actually will be where we value something. If we value something, that is where our attention will be. It's natural, right? If we value our money, our attention is on our money. And this yogi values, you know, Shamasundra. That is his that is what he values most, and that is where his attention is. So, Sri Rupa Manjari Pada, right? Sri Rupa Manjari Pada, Sei Mora Sampada, Sei Mora Bhajana Pujana. So, in that song, Narottam Das Thakur is telling us that, you know, these feet of Srila Rupa Goswami as Rupa Manjari, this is, you know, this is his wealth. You know, this is his wealth, you know. And it's just extraordinary. He says this is his bhajan and his puja, and it is the very life of his life. So that is where his attention is. It's actually quite amazing. His attention is on the feet of Srila Rupa Goswami. Because at those feet of Srila Rupa Goswami, as Rupa Manjari, all his desires are completely satisfied. And he feels the soothing rays, like the soothing rays of the full moon. He feels them and feels completely satisfied at the lotus feet of Srila Rupa Manjari, which is very nice, very, very beautiful. So his attention is on the feet of Krishna's very confidential servitor, right? That's where his attention is. And we know of a story of Sri Srila Sanatan Goswami, where his attention was also. And one time a devotee of Lord Shiva, a Brahmana devotee of Lord Shiva, and he was worshipping Lord Shiva for a benediction, right? He was worshipping Lord Shiva for a benediction. So Lord Shiva told him to go and see Sanatan Goswami. So that devotee went to see Sanatan Goswami and told him that Lord Shiva has asked me to come to you for the best benediction. Then Sanatan Goswami told him that you look over there, under that garbage over there, you find a touchstone, you can have that. That is the greatest benediction. Please have it. So the brahmana went and took the touchstone, and he was very poor. He was a very poor brahmana, so he was very, very elated, very happy upon getting the touchstone. Now he could touch iron and turn it into gold. It was, you know, all his problems would be solved, he thought. Then when he left Sanatan Goswami, he was thinking, you know, if this is the best benediction, why has he kept it with the garbage like that? So it was going through his mind, and he thought, this doesn't sound very, very, very right. So he decided to go back to Sanatan Goswami, and he went there and he said, yes, sir, if this is the best benediction, why have you kept it under the garbage? And Sanatan Goswami says, actually, this is not the best benediction. You know, this is not the best benediction. So the brahmana says, well, Lord Shiva has asked me to come to you for the best benediction, you know. And so Sanatan Goswami says, well, if you want the best benediction, first of all, go and throw that touchstone away. There's some water over there. Go and throw it away and come back. So the brahmana went, threw away the benediction, and came back to Sanatan Goswami. And Sanatan Goswami says, okay, so you want the best benediction. And Sanatan Goswami, at that point, initiated him into the chanting of the Maha Mantra. Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. He said, this is the best benediction, you know. This is the best benediction. So for Sanatan Goswami, that was where his wealth was. His wealth was this chanting of Hare Krishna. And that for him was the best benediction. And these are, you know, realized personalities. This is the highest realizations they have got. And he's telling us that this Maha Mantra is the best benediction, and that is what he gave the brahmana. And the brahmana went away on his merry way. And of course, we know that all the six Goswamis, you know, all the six Goswamis, they gave up all sorts of material elevated positions and a lot of wealth to take up Krishna consciousness, you know. So by the example, they're showing us that Krishna consciousness is actually the wealth, is the real wealth. And it's quite interesting that in this purport also, Srila Prabhupada stresses in some places just how fortunate a devotee is to have Krishna consciousness. You see, like he says that the yogi who is progressive is therefore on the true path of eternal good fortune. Eternal good fortune. Right? So it's such a great fortune to have this Krishna. Because fortune means wealth. The same idea. Fortune and wealth are the same idea. And he also says that it is by great fortune that one comes to Krishna consciousness. You know, it's by great fortune. So a Krishna conscious person is actually very, very fortunate because he has actually the greatest wealth. That is the greatest wealth. And that is what all the realized personalities are telling us, that this is the greatest wealth. Like, you know, we see in this material world, we see that there are magazines like the Fortune magazine and Fortune 500 companies and things like that, all people who have got lots of wealth, billions. So one year, they may be worth 20, 30 billion. Another year, we see that perhaps their fortune has dropped to 15 billion or something like that. I mean, I don't know how they calculate it, but it's just these fortunes are changing all the time before our very eyes, because they're based on you know, stock market valuations and property valuations and all that, and they're changing all the time. But the difference between that and Krishna consciousness is that the fortune of Krishna consciousness, that wealth of Krishna consciousness, doesn't change like that. Actually, the only change that one gets from that fortune is that it's ever increasing, because there is more and more realization, more and more connection. And so therefore, the fortune is increasing all the time, right? It's increasing all the time. And also, as it's a fortune, you know, it is easy also to be a miser and not spend it. You know, not spend the fortune. The fortune is there and has to be spent. You know, otherwise, we become miserly. And so spending the fortune is, we have to beg for the mercy to be able to spend this fortune, this great fortune of Krishna consciousness, to give it. That is how we spend it. Because wealth, right, wealth is power, right? When somebody has got lots of money, they've got some power. They've got lots of influence. And so this fortune of Krishna consciousness is actually real influence and power. We saw how Sri Prabhupada was very powerful in a sense. He could speak to anybody. Because he had the great wealth of Krishna consciousness, he knew that this was the greatest fortune, you know, higher than any scientific knowledge, any philosophical knowledge, any material knowledge, any knowledge. This was the greatest fortune, and he had such confidence. So this is our fortune also, Krishna consciousness, and that is how we should understand it. So the next quality that the yogi that Krishna speaks about is that it's mad gatena anto. This mad gatena, right? Mad gatena means abiding in me, always thinking of me, right? So the yogi is always thinking of Krishna. So this word abide is actually a very interesting word. It's actually connected with the word abode. And abode means like a dwelling, you know. An abode is like a shelter, dwelling, you know. And like we say, we should take shelter of Krishna. We like to talk about shelter in our Krishna consciousness, taking shelter of the lotus feet. So it paints a very nice picture, right? It means to stay with, or Krishna says, abides in me. So it's to stay in Krishna all the time. So that is where Krishna should be our resting place. That is where we should be. We should be taking shelter of Krishna. Krishna is saying that yogi abides in him, right? He stays in him. So there's a nice verse in the Bible which I like. It says that the name of the Lord is a strong tower. The righteous runneth into it and is safe, right? The name of the Lord is a strong tower. The righteous run into it and is safe. So last year I was visiting West Africa. I spent a couple of weeks there, and I was on a bus once, a public bus, right? I was chanting Japa. And over there, right, you have, when they're long journeys, you have itinerant preachers. They come on the bus, right? And they come and speak for a little while and they get off. You know, they do that to eke out an existence, right, to survive, because people give them some donation when they do that. But these are very pious people. They don't object at all when somebody gets on the bus and they start to preach. So he came on the bus and he was very fired up. He was saying, talk to the Lord in prayer. Talk to the Lord in prayer. And he was quoting this verse. He says, the name of the Lord is a strong tower. The righteous runneth to it and is safe. He was going on like that. The name of the Lord is a strong tower. The righteous run to it and is safe. And I was sitting there and I was chanting, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. And I was just feeling very, very nice. I was thinking, my goodness, I'm so fortunate. Right? I felt really fortunate somehow or other to be actually chanting the name of the Lord. Right, this person was talking about the name of the Lord, and I'm actually here, sitting here by the mercy of Srila Prabhupada, actually chanting the name of the Lord. And it was very, very nice. It was really, I thoroughly appreciated that incident, because it made me really feel somehow as a very, you know, some, you felt that, yeah, this is a real blessing that we have. We actually understand that this name is actually a strong tower. We actually, practically, we have understanding that if we chant, you know, we feel connection with Krishna in that way. So the greatest yogi, he's thinking of Krishna all the time. He's engaging his thoughts all the time in Krishna. And Srila Prabhupada says that we have to mold our lives in such a way that we are always thinking of Krishna, 24/7. And of course, Krishna told Arjuna, you should always think of me. He told him in many places in Bhagavad Gita, you should think of me. Even perform your duty and think of me, right? Krishna told Arjuna like that. He says, Tasmad Saveshu Kaleshu Ma Manusmara Yudhyacha. Maya Prita Mano Buddhi Mam Ivasyasi Asamchaya. He says you should perform your duty as a kshatriya and fight, but you should at the same time, you should think of me. So that thinking of Krishna should be going on all the time. Krishna is telling us that this Madhyatana, always thinking of me, the yogi is always thinking of him constantly, right? No matter what he's doing. So Sri Prabhupada says that we should think of Krishna all the time. Satasam Ketiyantu Mam, we should glorify Krishna, we should chant his names all the time. So one time a devotee heard Srila Prabhupada saying we should chant Krishna's names all the time. So the devotee asked Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada, you say we should chant all the time, 24/7. What about when we are eating? And Srila Prabhupada says, you chant between mouthfuls, right? You chant between mouthfuls when you're eating. So the chanting should never stop. It should go on all the time. And that will help us to think of Krishna all the time. Then another thing Krishna says about the yogi is that he is he offers transcendental loving service to me. Bhajate, right? So Srila Prabhupada speaks a little bit about Bhajate, about often rendering service to Krishna at the beginning of the purport. And this process of rendering service is what Lord Chaitanya actually calls abhidya, right? Abhidya. It means that engaging in sense activity for the satisfaction of the Lord. This is the process of abhidya, and that is bhakti, actually. So Lord Chaitanya says that this can actually develop one's original love of Godhead, which is the goal of life. And he says that this goal, you know, this goal is the living entity's real interest and is his greatest wealth. Lord Chaitanya says that this goal of developing love of Krishna is a living entity's creation. It's a very wonderful goal. You know, people are looking for goals in life all the time, looking for what is life about. So he gives us a very clear goal. Our goal is to develop love of Krishna, to reawaken our dormant Krishna consciousness. And that goal itself, even that goal alone, prema mahadana, this love of Krishna is actually our greatest wealth, Lord Chaitanya says, right? So Srila Prabhupada, at the beginning of the purport, says that it's our constitutional position to actually render service to Krishna because we are his part and parcels, right? So the duty of the part is to serve the whole. And we know from Sriso that a hand that is cut off from the body is useless, right? A hand that is cut off from the body, the hand is useless, right? If it's cut off from the body, the proper constitution is for the hand to serve the body. So we must understand that rendering of service is actually our real position, right? We are part and parcels. And that rendering of service is how we connect with Krishna. You see, loving Krishna means service, like we saw from Shureshwara Prabhu's talk on Saturday, how this devotee Shrutaketi, yes, how he was telling Srila Prabhupada that somehow that he doesn't feel so, you know, he doesn't display these very ecstatic symptoms when he sees Srila Prabhupada like some other devotees. And Srila Prabhupada says that, well, you like to serve me, don't you? And he says that service to me is love, right? So we love by serving. So our love for Krishna will take the form of service, right? And that is the only service that can truly satisfy. There are so many types of people who try to give service, right? Like Srila Prabhupada tells us many times how Mahatma Gandhi tried to serve his country, but somehow or other, the people were not satisfied. Still, he was shot. He gave all, and somehow or other, his own countryman shot him, right? So this is how service that is misplaced, you know, it can't satisfy. To get real satisfaction, service has to be given to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the most grateful person. He is the most grateful person. And even any little service rendered to him, is one's eternal good fortune, right? And we also know of this person who told his wife that he served his wife for so many years and family. He says, look, I want to take sannyas. I want to go to the Hare Krishna temple and chant Hare Krishna, stay there, you know, just spend time there. And then the wife would say, no, what service have you done? You know, there's this to do, there's that to do, there's that to do. There's unlimited things. He's an old man, and still the wife wants him to do so many things, you know. You have to get our daughter married. You have to do this. And so, therefore, you know, that service is never, never complete. It can't satisfy. But by serving Krishna, we can actually get all the satisfaction, like Krishna is saying here. The highest yogi, he gives him service because he understands, you know. He understands that, you know, this is the completion of service. So bhakti actually means servo padi vinay moktam, right? Giving up all the upadis. And when the service is done properly, by agreeing to serve Krishna's senses, right? Hishikena, Hishikesha. Engaging the services, the senses in Krishna's service, you know, somehow or other, the result of that is that we become free from all the false designations, you know, that this is family, this is that. I'm the body. I have to serve my family. I have to serve all these people. I've all got all these duties, all these illusory relationships, right? All these illusory relationships. So bhakti, by performing bhakti, by engaging our services in Krishna, by agreeing to satisfy Krishna, we become free from these false designations or these upadis, and we become reinstated in our position, like Arjuna was, right? Arjuna saw all his family members. He saw on the opposing side his uncles, his teachers, his brothers, his friends, He saw all these people, all these connections with the body. He was seeing himself as the body. Yes, I'm body, I'm a warrior, yes. But he was seeing all these connections because of all the upadis, right? And by agreeing to serve Krishna's senses, by agreeing to serve his Krishna's senses, he said at the end, yes, yes, my illusion is now dispelled, right? He was happy, right? My illusion is now dispelled. I can actually see that my real position is to have contact with you, is to have connection with you. That is who really I am, right? So this is the result of bhakti. Bhakti will give us that understanding that our real self is spiritual, part and parcel of Krishna. Our duty is to serve Krishna, and that is where we will find our happiness. So that is the topmost yogi. This is what Krishna says is the topmost yogi, right? So, of course, in the purpose, the Prabhupada says that the yogi concentrates on the form of Krishna as Shyamasundara. Now, in the ultimate issue, right, Krishna is not different from his name, his form, his qualities, and his pastimes, you know, his entourage, you know, like Rupa Manjari. These are all, he's not different from all these things, right? But somehow or other, Srila Prabhupada emphasizes that if we think of Krishna in this original form, or Krishna says that, or serving him in various rasas, right, in various connections, this will be the perfection. So that is the perfection of yoga, Krishna tells us. Bhakti yoga is the highest yogi, and Krishna recommends this process for everybody. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Nityai Gaura Premanande Haribo. Thank you.
Oh, okay. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. So, any contributions or...
I'm trying to find... I did have a question. Trivial, but...
Yes.
It was just in the periphery. So I was just kind of caught off guard because you kind of ended abruptly. Oh, no, I can't find it. Oh, it's just in the purport. It mentioned about all the different types of yogas, and I couldn't identify some of them. They look very similar. It was Dhyana yoga, Hatha yoga, what was the other? Anyway, they look very similar.
Raja Yoga.
Yeah, Raja Yoga, Hatha Yoga, and Ashtanga Yoga. They're all.
Yeah, he mentions Kama Yoga, Jnana Yoga, or Dhyana Yogi.
And then after
Raja Yoga and Hatha Yogi. Yes, they're different yogis. Yeah.
It seemed that those three were very, very similar. I was just wondering what the difference between them were.
Are we talking about Hatha, Dhyana, and Raja?
Yeah. I just know how my page got closed. I just...
Anyway. I mean, Hatha is all... Hatha I know to be all the sitting postures and the breathing exercises, you know? That I know to be Hatha. And Dhyana I also know to be the, you know, the concentration, the stage of... No, Dharana is concentration. Dhyana is actually meditation on the form of the Lord, you know, increased meditation. So those two, I guess those two definitely are Ashtanga Yoga. And Raja Yogi in the middle there, I don't know what Raja Yogi is, but I'm guessing that it's probably another part of Ashtanga Yoga as well.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, it sounds right. Yeah, I was thinking a similar word. Dhyana is meditation. Hatha yoga is more concentrating on the physical aspect. You know, like, in other words, just like Ashtanga yoga, it's got eight limbs. So the first four would be taken as external, Hatha yoga, and then the last four, Dhyana yoga, would be internal. And then Raja yoga would be the same, synonymous with Ashtanga yoga. But anyway, like I said, that's just a technicality.
Right. Hare Krishna. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.
Jai. If nobody has anything else. Okay.
Yes. Thank you.
And also thank you.
Oh,
Hare Krishna, Ramananda. Thanks for getting me in.
Okay.
Good class. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Prabhu.
All right, well, if there's nothing else, then we'll see everybody tomorrow morning for another Armless class.
Hi. Hi. Haribo.
Okay.
Haribo.
Hare Krishna.